piece called Around the World from our Sky High album. And it's great to be with everyone. Thank you all for calling in. It's 9 o'clock in the evening here in Florida, which is, I guess, 6 p.m. in the evening in California Pacific Time, and I'm not sure what it is in Cape Town, South Africa, but I'm sure our friends Indy and Sven are aware that it's probably 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning where they are. We just were with them a few weeks ago and absolutely treasure our time together with them and with the other inspiring people that we met while we were in Cape Town and Durban and Johannesburg in South Africa. So welcome everyone to the World Peace Diet Circle call. It's held every month on the third Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And I want to take a couple minutes here to sort of outline what we'll be doing this evening. We're going to be talking a little bit, actually, to our good friend Lorena Muke, who's we've heard from a few times before, and she's making some really wonderful progress in her Ethical Choices Program, nonprofit vegan education organization that's bringing the vegan message into schools. First in Atlanta, where she lived, and now it's going nationwide. So this is very exciting. And we'll be talking with her a little bit at the beginning. And then I do want to spend a little bit of time also sharing with everyone some of the news from our recent travels. We were gone basically since the last call, right after the last call, about a month ago, we left and flew from Orlando to Dubai for a good almost 2 weeks, and then we were in South Africa for a good 2 weeks, and so we just got back here a few days ago in Florida, again after the expedition and adventure of doing what we can to help spread the vegan message in these other parts of the world, and collaborate and work together with vegan advocates in other areas. And it's, again, very inspiring to see how things are going in other parts of the world. So, again, thank you all for joining us. And what I'd like to do now before we begin our conversation with Lorena is take just maybe 1 or 2 minutes to have our beginning meditation, which, as we perhaps remember, we say the prayer that, I guess, or affirmation, I guess would be a better word, from the Prayer Circle for Animals, which is, compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. And we say that every day at noon, wherever we are. There's quite a few people. I'm not sure hundreds of people have actually signed up on our website. It's called circleofcompassion.org, and it's the worldwide prayer circle for animals that Madeline and I and Judy Carmen started up quite a few years ago, actually, now. And so the idea is that every day at noon, wherever you happen to be on the planet, to affirm that silently or out loud, and to build a consciousness for compassion and sensitivity and mercy and protection and liberation of animals, including all mammals, including human beings as well, of course. So compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. And so let's just, again, take a moment and give thanks for this precious opportunity that we have here this evening to connect with each other through this teleconference call, and with a spirit of liberation and joy and freedom, which is really at the heart of the movement of vegan living, and especially, I think, in many ways, the World Peace Diet version of that, which is based on deepening our understanding of the spiritual connection that we share with each other and with the earth and with the animals and with the source of all life. so that it's not merely a social justice issue, which of course it is, but to recognize our whole yearning to liberate animals as deeper evolution of human consciousness, so that we can actually understand directly our right relationship with each other and with all forms of life, the source of all life, and realize essentially that what we are is not a fundamentally separate thing, an object that was born and will die, that what we are, what all life is, essentially is a manifestation. And what is, whatever it's a manifestation of, that's the question. And it's something beyond concepts, beyond theories, something that we can perhaps directly experience when we get quiet enough and listen within. So out of that inner listening, we can connect with our intuition, inner wisdom that can help guide us to live our unique lives on this planet with authenticity and meaning and with purpose, with dignity and respect for others and for ourselves, and to really accept and embrace the adventure of a human life and all the challenges that it brings, especially for us as vegans when we're awakening in many ways to truths that most people do not want to awaken to. And as we do that, it can be very painful. So this is a time for us to share our feelings, share our thoughts and inspirations, our concerns and doubts and so forth, any insights that we may have. If you have any questions about your own advocacy efforts, this is a great time to mention them or to share them with the whole group. Just press *6 on your phone, and I will see it right here. It'll make a little flag next to your name, and I will be able to, sometimes it's, most of the time it's not a name, it's just a phone number, so I don't know who it is. But, and I can unmute your phone, and you can share with us. So remember that *6 is the magic thing to hit anytime, and you can speak if you'd like to. And we, of course, we're always happy to hear any concerns or questions you may want to express. That's the whole purpose, really. I mean, one of the purposes of having this third Thursday call, it's people, only people who are facilitators in the World Peace Diet or going through the facilitator training or who are specially registered for the World Peace Diet Circle are on the call. So it's a very safe space where we can share our ideas and thoughts and concerns without, you know, worrying about someone saying, yeah, but where do you get your protein or something like that. So we give thanks for each other. We give thanks for this precious opportunity of a human life to contribute to the healing of our human species and our society and our planet. And we give thanks also knowing that all the ripples that radiate out into the infinite web of relations from our being together here this evening will be ripples that bring peace and freedom and joy and abundance and greater awareness, not only into our own lives and the lives of our loved ones, but into the lives of all living beings. That we're here in many ways to find our unique way to be a catalyst for positive social change, to find the unique gifts that we have within us that we can share with others, and to inspire each other and to be inspired to share these gifts freely and generously, knowing that as we give, we receive, and that whatever we express when it comes from our heart is always for the highest good of all, and that as we express our true nature of caring and freedom and joy and celebration, that we create the opportunity for others to do the same thing. The idea that the most powerful, positive way we can affect others is through our own liberation, through our own advocacy that comes from a deep sense of connectedness with the larger order of which we are a part. So bless you all. Thank you again for joining us here this evening. And we're still a little bit on the South African time zone here. I'm still a little bit jet-lagged. I still get up every morning at about 3 o'clock in the morning, wide awake, and trying this. And then usually, actually, it's 9:11 now, and I'm already feeling like it's kind of very late. It's been a long day already. But anyway, it's great to be able to have this opportunity to share together. And so what I'd like to do, as I promised earlier, right at the beginning, I think it's a good idea, is to hear a little bit from our wonderful friend, part of our family here, really, in the World Peace Diet Circle, Lorena Mjuke from Atlanta, who is the founder and basically the director, I would say, if that's the right word, of the Ethical Choices Program. And I'm going to go ahead and unmute Lorena's phone here, and we can just hear a little bit about some of the things that have been happening over the last 3 or 4 months since we heard from her last. And it's very exciting, I think. So, Lorena, are you there?
Yes. Hi, Will. Hi, everyone.
Oh, good. Wow, you're a bundle of energy. I really see that. Like all vegans, we're very blessed. We don't have all that saturated fat and cholesterol clogging our arteries and clouding our thinking.
That's right. That's right.
We can actually move forward and celebrate our lives in various ways. And you're certainly doing that. You know, I was just blessed to be able to be on a call with you last night with a few other people talking about some of the accomplishments and some of the goals and visions that you're having. And as everyone knows, Lorena has been working for quite a few years in the Atlanta area as originally really as someone who was kind of single-handedly bringing the vegan message to public schools in the Atlanta area, high schools primarily, I mean high schools completely. And as you shared with Lorena actually a while back, you're feeling like it's time to take it to another level instead of just you doing it all the time, over and over and over again, hundreds of times a year, going in and making presentations to sort of you've learned so much about how to do it. And so you had the idea it would be great to have a whole, pardon the word, army, but I mean, I guess a whole, mm-hmm. force of people who can do the same thing in cities all over the United States. And what's happening? How has this been unfolding over the last few months?
It's been fantastic. So after almost 10 years of bringing the message locally here in Atlanta, we put together a nonprofit, which was launched actually at the end of October last year. In November, we started working towards expanding the program. And in this less than 3 months, we've hired 13 more educators. So we are 14 with me. Seven states. And we actually have one educator also in Canada, too, hoping to bring the message. And I like what you said about we are a little army of vegan educators, but our weapons, quote unquote, are compassion and justice. So we kind of call ourselves that.
Right. Wow. So that's just a huge leap. I mean, I thought when you were going to start this thing, you have one. I thought maybe you would have now two or maybe three, and in just a matter of a couple of months, you're up to 14, which is just fantastic. So these are 14 people who are all vegans, who are all committed to learning from you how to be effective vegan advocates going into high schools. And what your nonprofit is doing is paying these people to go in and give messages, paying them for a presentation plus for their travel expenses. And then the whole idea is to expand this program as much as possible, as quickly as possible, because, you know, we don't have like thousands of years to wake up here. We need to do this pretty soon. And this is a great age group, I think, to aim to focus on, high school students. Is that what you think is one of the best age groups?
Definitely. There's a lot of groups like Vegan Outreach that focus on targeting college students. But really, high school students are very untapped niche. And we know that they are already making decisions of what to eat. They're at an age that they can, you know, challenge a lot of society's, I guess, norms.
Yeah.
And we encourage them to do it in a very respectful way, and also trying to encourage them to align their values with their choices. So just last year, for example, between South Carolina, Ohio, and Georgia, we gave 289 presentations, reaching almost 9,000 teams. If we can multiply that even, you know, by a few states, ideally, our goal is to reach tens of thousands of teens every year with this message. And these are the next generation of power makers, of decision makers, which will also, you know, will drive the demand for these vegan products. So we think that there's such an urgency to spread the vegan message that if we can spread faster, we would. So we're just trying to do, you know, as much as we can, and we're working really around the clock. But it's a pleasure to work for this cause.
Wow. I know you're extremely humble, really. I mean, you're not telling everything, but I think it's great to see that, for one thing, people have been forthcoming in your drive for donations, you know, to support this community. This is 100%, you're a nonprofit, so this is 100% dependent on donations. But as I understand it, already you've got about $50,000 in donations.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good foundation to really be able to create some paid positions for assistance and for a treasurer or someone to kind of run things, and then also funding for these 14 people to go out there and bring the message, because people, you know, need to be able to do this and not merely as volunteers. I think it's great having volunteers, but to actually help people, have a life, I think it's fantastic. So what is it like those of us, like you've actually gone through the Ropey Side training, and a lot of people on the call have gone through the training. And I think you mentioned that several people who are, actually in the 14 have gone through the Ropey Side training. And, I know you want to expand this in the future. I would want to say to everybody who's listening, if you're interested or know people who are interested in bringing this message, there's lots of ways we can help Lorraine, either maybe by, you know, if you're in a state where they need an educator, if you can help with donation efforts. Is there anything, I mean, what would you like to say to all of us about this? Because I think it's very exciting.
Yes, those are the two most basic and urgent needs. More educators, of course, and also more funding. The more funding we have, the more educators we can hire. And I think people who go through the World Peace Diet Facilitator Training are ideal to bring the message with our curriculum, because we've noticed that people that have gone through this training are able to be sensitive at presenting the message of veganism without being pushy or bullying. So actually, that's the way that we want to present it, in a humane way, that we want to be relatable, we want to be non-judgmental, respectful, but at the same time, making sure that we're being very truthful to ourselves and to the animals that we represent, of course.
Right. Yeah. So, one of the things we try to always emphasize is that if we're drawn to this training to deepen our capacity to be effective vegan advocates, that we're also working toward finding actual concrete ways that we can share this message. And I think, Lorraine, you're doing such a great service by not only being an example of how to do this, but actually creating a concrete avenue for someone who, you know, I think especially people in Western states, but I think in general, you know, if you're in a state where there's a need for more educators to go into the high schools, you know, I would suggest contacting Lorena and going to your website probably would be a good thing. You can find out more there. There's also, of course, you know, any ideas you have to help with funding is always helpful. I know there's been some very generous funding already, which is great. I think probably because people who there are some people who are funding animal liberation causes, and when they see something that really has a high level of integrity and also a high level of effectiveness, you know, they think, you know, they want to help support that. You know, it's not easy, I think, to find good quality projects, and you know, I think what you're doing is such a great quality project that, you know, it's really in many ways the kind of a thing that can really snowball, I'm hoping. You know, it's the kind of thing that can really take off. Yeah.
I think human education in our movement has tremendous potential, and we see it already. And the fact that we can get into schools and that schools are opening their doors to us and we're able to openly talk about veganism, about the plight of animals, about the state of the earth and human health, I think this is huge. So what I would like people to do, if they are interested in learning more, is go to our website, which is very easy. We purchased another domain to make it easier. So now it's ecprogram.org, E as in elephant, C as in Charlie, and the word program.org. We have lots of information there. They can meet some of our educators. They have we have contact information. We have a tab where it lists our job opening, so if people are interested, they can apply there. We also are on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. So there's lots of ways that they can share about us with their friends. They can share our fundraising campaigns, et cetera. So just to be in touch with us, and we'd be glad to, you know, to put them to work in whatever skill they have.
Great. Yeah, I just went online. It's ecprogram.org, or you can also type Ethical Choices Program. It's called ethicalchoicesprogram.org. And it's really an honor to be working with Lorena and people like Kip Anderson, who's, as you all know, is the creator of the Cowspiracy documentary, and it's a new one, a brand new film. He's just now launching, too. I don't know if you're aware of it, but I think people are. It's called What the Hell? And it's sort of a similar, like Cowspiracy is showing how you know, animal agriculture is devastating the health of our planet, and how the main organizations that should be protecting the planet are not. And What the Health, I think, is a similar thing for our health, how animal agriculture is devastating our health, and how the organizations that you think would be protecting us are actually not at all. Yeah, so we've got Kip is on the board of directors, and Steve Kaufman is a wonderful founding president of the chair of the Christian Vegetarian Association.
He's the reason why this program exists, really.
Yes, I know. He's been just a long-time pillar of your support of your work and of so many great things. I can't say enough about him. He's a wonderful person. And David Carter, of course, he's a famous vegan, 300-pound vegan linebacker or something like that, defensive lineman, a professional football player. And Pat Priest and myself, and so we have just a wonderful team, and it's just you know, it's only a few months old at this point, but already making a huge impact.
Not even 3 months.
People
might recognize some of their you know, fellow World Design facilitators if they visit our website where the human educators are listed. Actually, right before calling, I finished updating everyone with their pictures and everything. So it's just neat to see how many amazing, committed, compassionate vegan people we have on board. So we are ready to change the world one teen at a time.
Right. That is so awesome. Yeah, I'm just looking at it right now. There's somebody from Connecticut, two from Florida, two couple from Georgia, a couple, three from New York, a couple from Ohio, South Carolina, Texas, and Canada. So, yeah, it's definitely taking off. These are beautiful people. Some of them have gone through the Wolfieside training.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're interested in helping out in any way, the website is Ethical Choices Program, and the vegan message to high school students is really, this is a very focused program, and it was great to hear, actually, also what you were saying, that since you've got so much practice getting this working, and now that you have your own 501c3 nonprofit organization, that the acceptance rate by the schools has been very high, that schools have not been questioning the whole thing. They've been saying, sure, come on, we'd love to have you. You know, it's been relatively easy for people who are interested in going into high schools to actually get approved to come on in, and that's really good news also. And then the other thing that I really liked hearing a little bit more about, too, is the way that you're also working to create a database of, to help follow up with students, so that not only do they watch, because you always show a video as part of your presentation and then give them information and have discussions. So as students make changes, then you're working also on ways that you can kind of mentor these people so that they're not just left hanging. I think that's a beautiful idea. And then get their email addresses in a sense, be able to, so that they feel supported and can continue to learn.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think for all those things, you're going to need more people and a bigger army and more funding. And,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's so in alignment with everything we're doing with the World Peace Diet training that I'm really excited about it, and it seems to go along so well with so many other projects that are emerging right now in the vegan movement that are based on a more inclusive a way of being creative and working in a loving way with people to help them transition to a more mm-hmm. conscious way of being.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Anything else? What do you have coming up over the next month or two, Arianna, you could share with people?
Yeah. Well, I'll be trying to share what we've been doing lately. So I'm going to be giving some talks. I'll be at an event now in February that is organized by the Triangle Vegetarian Society in South Carolina. Then in March, I'm going to the Tallahassee, the North Florida Veg Fest, and I'll be a speaker there too. And then another one here in Georgia in March. No, that's in April. Oh, I forget.
Great.
Yes, April, which is another event for Compassionate Kids, which is the Kindness Veg Fest. So we are just trying to have a presence in as many Veg Fests as possible. So people learn about us, and they can share about our goals and our achievements, and they can also be part of our program in any capacity that they want.
Great. Yeah, that Triangle Veg Fest you're going to be going to in February in Raleigh, I think it's in Raleigh, North Carolina, they have a very active vegetarian group with the largest vegan Thanksgiving in the country. We've been there. We know Dilip Barm. He's a good friend of ours. He's kind of the organizer.
Yes, he's the one that invited me. Correct.
Right.
Amazing.
And it's I remember at one point I was, we stayed at his house a few times. And in fact, he's a photographer also. He took the photographs that you see of me that we very often put on our flyers. That's all done by Dilip.
Oh, wow.
But,
yeah.
And before he married his wife, who's now his wife, but before that he was kind of a bachelor for about, I don't know what it was, about 6 or 7 years. And every day for, I think it was 7 years, every evening he created a different dinner for himself and
mm-hmm.
took a photograph of
continues,
it.
Continues, actually.
Yeah, so you can see. So like 7 years of different dinners, 365 days a year, a different one. So when people say, well, there's not much variety in the vegan diet, he said, well, it's like whatever that is, like 5,000 different things or whatever, some huge number. He kept creating a new one that he had never done before every day for 7 years.
Well, actually, in his latest Christmas letter or holiday letter, he shared that so far, since actually he's married his wife too, he has never served the same dinner during this whole marriage. So I guess he's for many, 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 many years, more than seven, he's never
served. So he kept going even after he married her.
It's
been quite a few years since I've been married.
Amazing.
So. Wow. Isn't that beautiful? I know. I just love that kind of spirit of the infinite possibilities of compassion and creativity. You know, there's no limit.
Yes.
Absolutely. Great. So I also, I encourage everyone also to get on Lorena's, what do you call it? It's 5 days a week you put out something that's wonderful.
Yes. It's a very short daily newsletter, Monday through Friday, in which I try to inform people about what's going on with anything related to, of course, the vegan message, animal agriculture industry. So I usually put an article, a recipe, or a famous quote, or a Bible verse, or just two little items just to encourage people to be, more compassionate, to be more involved, and also to inspire people, because some of the news that I share are hopeful news. So it's a little bit of everything, but if anyone wants to receive those daily newsletters, they can contact me through the Ethical Choices Program or the CVA, which is the Christian Vegetarian Association.
Great. Yeah, so check out the website, ethicalchoicesprogram.org, and I highly recommend getting on her list for the newsletter too. Excellent. All right. Well, it's wonderful to hear your voice, and thank you for shining
Likewise.
A light, sharing in our world, Lorena. It's great work you're doing. Let me just see. If anyone has a question for Lorena, let me know. Press *6. Otherwise, we're going to I can answer some questions later, I'm sure, or we can pass them on to Lorena too. I don't want to keep you up. I know you've got a lot you need to do. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Will. Bye-bye, everyone.
How you doing? All righty. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. All right. So, great. So if anyone, like I say, if you have a question for Lorena or for me, press *6 on your phone. And I think that's right. I hope I say that. Sometimes I think it's *7. I'm pretty sure it's *6. So what I would, as I was talking earlier, I wanted to share a little bit about our travels. I definitely want to do that, and then maybe we can discuss a few other things in our time together this evening. And of course, especially if you have any particular dilemmas or questions or concerns or things you'd like to just rejoice about, you know, if you have some kind of great triumph or something you're happy about, that's always great to share too. So it could be anything at all, but if you would like to ask a question or make a comment, press *6. Actually, someone just did that, so I will go ahead and unmute your phone. This is area code 425. Not sure who it is, but here we go. Yes, hello.
Hello, Will. Hi, everybody. This is Pamela.
Oh, Pamela Zeman. Hi.
Yes, hi. Hey, just wanted to share something real quick. I'm at a natural vision healing workshop this week. And the thing I want to share is the power of our own message and being vulnerable, because we started doing EFT tapping, and I said, there is so much cheese around here, it's really bothering me. And this other woman said, I think we should keep it on point. I think, and it became this big discussion about, we should keep it relevant to eyes, but it's like I said, this is coming up now. And it was funny how this woman really didn't want to go there, but we ended up tapping on how hard it was for me growing up, being around cows where the babies were taken away all the time. And I just allowed myself to feel that and cry, and a lot, wow, because it really was painful for me. And that changed everybody in the group, because everybody was tapping, you know, the EFT tapping, they're tapping along on my story with me.
So when you're saying tapping, you're talking about an actual physical tap, because a lot of people maybe have no idea what you're tapping, but I know you're tapping on their own. Where do you tap again?
Right, yeah, right. It's called emotional freedom technique, EFT.
Right.
It's kind of a big thing where you say what's going on, like what your feelings are, and then you tap on the acupuncture points, the meridians, and it actually is quite effective.
Yeah.
And so I was just tapping on the whole thing and how that led to me wearing glasses, like not wanting to see, and, you know, I won't get into all the details. But my point is, I've done this before, like in a writing group, when I started writing about my experience growing up, and it's not like I'm a big ball baby or anything like that, but when my emotions are allowed to come up and I just share my story, that has been the most effective I've ever felt in my life, is when I just allow myself to be vulnerable and share with people, because people in there are going, but I like cheese, even the guy guiding me through it. And I'm like, that's the thing that bugs me so much, is when I end up looking like the bitch, you know, because I know and I've seen what really goes on. And everybody wants me to join the party, like, hey, have some ice cream. Come on.
Yeah. So what you're saying is it was just a matter of just being vulnerable.
Sorry, I got cut off for a little bit, but I'm back.
Yeah. It's just a matter of, like, when you're being vulnerable to the people and actually just sharing your feelings without sort of lecturing them or telling them what they should do, or even telling your own story. You're just showing your feelings because they've come up. That you think that's the most effective actual vegan advocacy as well. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I really do in some situations. You know, you're not going to go around all the time doing this, but in this case, this woman who was like, I think we should keep it to guys. And she said later, she goes, I knew, I just didn't want to go there. But she ended up coming around. And they were like, I had no idea. And people really still don't know.
Right.
And it was so freeing just to be witnessed and to be real. And it was really quite amazing.
Wow.
I think there's
great.
A lot of people with vision problems, too, that just don't want to see. And there's a lot of emotion and a lot of subconscious stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. That happened to me. You know, I was, I had good eyes, you know, when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
But then at one point, I think I was about 8 or 9, I started having to wear glasses. And I was only when I went on, stopped eating animal foods and went on that long walk I went on, that my vision started really clearing up. I think that was part of it, not wanting to see or feeling like it's too horrible what they're doing. And maybe part of it really is the food and the violence toward animals and to each other. All these things. Right. So I guess when I think what you're – I mean, for me, when I'm thinking about what you're saying, it really does resonate for me. It's when we're real and authentic in our feelings. I mean, you weren't putting on any act. You were just being honest. This is real. This is really real for you, you know. On some level, other people do feel the same way. They've just repressed it, you know.
Yeah, yep. So I just am very thankful to be able to share that. You know, it does take a lot of courage, I think, to really be real and honest and come from what our story is.
Yeah.
So thanks for letting me share that.
Great. All right. Well, thanks, Pamela. As everybody knows, Pamela is a longtime World Peace facilitator in the Seattle area, and I believe, Seattle.
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
You do a lot of wonderful video work, and thanks so much for sharing that and for the work you're doing. It's great to always great to hear you. Yeah. All right. Take care.
Thanks. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Bye. Oh, actually, someone else is just now pressed *6, so I'll go ahead and unmute. It looks like it's 410-924-6579. Hello.
Hi, it's me, Nancy Posnack. Hi.
Oh, hi, Nancy. Yes.
Hi, nice to be on the call.
Great.
Thank you so much for doing this. Well, I'm trying to make it quick. I've recently come across this thing, and I just wanted to get, if anybody had any feedback about it, I'm kind of upset about it. Direct Action Everywhere, who I love the group, and I've done some disruptions with them. They have this new program called Taking Liberation Pledge, and it's encouraging people to refuse to eat. And I understand that, and I don't like eating, you know, being around that stuff, but I also understand it's our culture now. And I've had some wonderful experiences going to parties, being at dinners, and talking. People ask me about being vegan, and they're listening. And I've also gotten better at, like, the person who was telling my story, and, you know, I've gotten better at speaking about it. But
right.
And wonderful experiences, they actually listen and they get it. And whether they become vegan, you know, now or later, I don't know, but I didn't feel like that was my point, you know, to try to change them. And
right.
I'm going to a family function, and there's going to be, you know, animal products there. And I feel that I've written on their page, like, I understand that some people want to do this, but I don't want this to be, like, now this is the best way to be vegan. And so I'm just a little bit, because part of me would actually like to be able to do that, you know, and I don't know if it's, I'm just scared to, or is it just not really a practical thing? And can we do that and set an example? Like Thanksgiving, I did a gentle little speak out, and something that I read from the World Peace Diet, one of the many things that just kind of riveted my whole being, you know, about the cycle of life and the whole process of food and what it means, you know, it connects us to life. It was a fabulous passage, and I, you know, read it a couple of times, and it just made so much sense. So instead of trying to point out to them, by the way, you're eating a dead body of an individual, you know, I put it in the context of the cycle of life and the sun and appreciating where it comes from, and then I said, and this was an individual too, and you know, I kind of threw that in there. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to ramble on so long, but I think you got what I'm trying to say.
Well, yeah, it seems like what you're saying is a little bit of a question of whether or not, you know, I mean, you really want to take the pledge, the DXC Liberation Pledge, and commit to that, or sort of pass on that because you'd rather have the freedom to sometimes.
Yeah, I'm questioning the wisdom of the pledge. Yeah, I'm questioning the wisdom of it, making it a thing that, you know, to try to, is it being presented as, okay, this is if you're really vegan, if you're 100%, this is what you'll do, or, you know, for people that want to do this, here's something, but, you know, I think it's really important to have ways to help vegans deal with being in those situations rather than saying you shouldn't be there in the first place.
Right, yeah. I know, I actually feel the same way. I you know, when I first heard about the Liberation Pledge, I thought, well, it's a great idea on one level because you're, you know, it sort of gives people, or at least some people in some situations, the sense that I'm not going to sit silently by while people are eating.
Right.
My friends, you know, I'm like the flesh of the animals. And
yeah.
So, and sort of be right there and say it. But, you know, the thing is, for me, I felt that, doesn't allow enough flexibility. I mean, I don't want to be tied into a pledge that,
right.
Maybe does not work in the best interest of animals or the people I'm with, if they're eating some meat or dairy and I can, talk to them, because sometimes, you know,
right.
I find myself in those situations if we're, say, you know, I'm speaking at a church and then they're having a potluck afterwards and I'm giving a lecture and they need, you know, it's not always a vegan event, but I'm going to be presenting it and I'm not going to, if I just, like, said, well, I'm not going to eat with you people. And
right, yeah, exactly.
It would, like, you know, create a whole big,
yeah.
You know, bunch of resistance where you wouldn't really necessarily want to do that.
Exactly.
So I think, you know, we have to trust our own intuition. That's what I feel in general.
Right.
It's realizing that every situation is unique, every person's unique, every, you know, each time we have to sort of tune into our intuition, our heart, and then be free to respond from there. And I really do, you know, in general, I really do like the DXV people. And I remember not too long ago, it's been probably almost a year ago now, Mel and I went to their headquarters in Oakland, and I gave a lecture there and met everybody.
Ah.
I'd already met quite a few of them before. And this one guy who was there, he's one of the main people, told me how he buys the World Peace Diet, you know, like by 20s and 30s, and just gives them away. It's the most important book, he said that, you know, and so, you know, I know that they're, in many ways, they are on the same wavelength of being positive and being non-violent, and but I think, you know, we just have to be careful. The sort of, Wayne is a very charismatic guy, very nice guy, but I think you have to be careful not to be let it become something where, you know, there's
Let's
a group
hope.
Dictating to everybody what to do, you know. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, and that's what I'm concerned about,
We want to, you know, everybody has to have their freedom to choose what's right.
Exactly,
you know,
yeah.
The best way for them to be an advocate, you know, that's, I think that's a
critical
point. But I think it's, you know, it's good to, you know, raise ideas like this, like, you know, to at least do that. And I've been in those situations sometimes, but, you know, I've been sitting in a restaurant and Madeline and I ordered a vegan meal and we're sitting with a guy or somebody or a couple and they say, well, is it okay with you if we order some fish? And then we say, actually, it's not okay if you order some fish. And then they have to decide, you know, if they want to order something else or what they want to do. And usually okay, you know, they don't order fish. But that was kind of a long time ago. That was probably like 15 years ago. In the last 10 years, it never comes up anymore. That's one of the nice things about when you really get out there as a vegan advocate, then these situations just sort of disappear because everybody knows they're not going to ever think about doing that. But in the beginning, you know, when you're still, you know, with people and everything, it's always somewhat of a challenge to tune into every situation and to respond as best we can. But I think the most important thing is to do something that helps plant the seed, you know, to plant the seed of veganism.
Right.
And I think, you know, that's the most important thing, whether we do it perfectly or not, you know, we never know. But like you said, you know, you did the best you could and that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I ask you one
quick
question?
Sure, yeah.
What do you think about the possibility of doing a facilitator training on here in the Baltimore, D.C. area?
Okay, well, I can think about it. You know, we just did two of them in South Africa, and we used to do one every year in Cincinnati when the Jubilee was going on, and we've done a few in California over the last few years too.
Mm-hmm.
And they went well. I mean, the ones we did in South Africa went well. We did them just as a work weekend, like a 3-day. We had a Friday night, for example, lecture, and then all day Saturday, and then Sunday, maybe a day, half a day, or till lunch, or a little after lunch, something like that is doable. We can cover quite a lot of ground, and so we can maybe think about something like that.
I think it's Memorial Day weekend.
We're coming. We're coming on that.
I just wanted to throw that out there.
Right.
We want to take complete advantage of you while you're here.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a good idea. And everyone who's listening, too, you know, as we're traveling around, I mean, that was something I realized, you know, usually we just give a lecture and that's it. And yeah, I think from time to time we could also do something a little bit more substantial, like a weekend workshop or a 1.5-day workshop following a lecture, perhaps, or in place of. So let me know, and anyone, wherever you are, if you're in wherever, Colorado or whatever, if you're interested in that. We're going to be, this year is kind of unusual. We're in the RV the entire year of 2016 and traveling around North America. So we do have an opportunity to, we can't be everywhere, but we can get to, you know, quite a few different places now since we're traveling full time this year. And our good friend, Tara is watching over our house. So, yeah, that's
okay.
A good idea. We can talk about
I set up a Facebook page for the event so I can also post that. And I'm started getting an email list of people interested in attending the event. So there's a lot of, you know, vegans. The vegan community between Baltimore and D.C. is pretty strong.
Right.
When I told them about you, I a lot of people didn't know, and I said, well, he was in Cowspiracy, and they're like, oh, okay. That's great. So
right.
You really got to get your name and your book out there, you know, and get all the stuff that's in there because it's just so powerful. So thank you very
much. Great, Nancy. Okay. Thanks so much for checking in. Yeah. Bye-bye. Thanks. All right. Wow. Thank you so much, Nancy. All right. So, yeah, thanks. So that's something I'm glad you reminded me. I was going to mention that these workshops went very well in South Africa, and we could do a few more in North America as we're traveling as well. If you have, an area where that would go, where you can get some folks together, then let us know. All right, so I'd like to talk a little bit just briefly here about our travel, some of the lessons that we learned while we were in Dubai and South Africa, and then I'm going to be open up for questions. Where it's already, gosh, we've already been going here almost an hour, so I'll do this kind of briefly. So it was a really very eye-opening experience. So quite a few things we learned about veganism and about the cultures, other cultures, and their approach to this subject. And I think all of these things are good for us in our learning, and I'm noticing, I think our great friends Andy and Sven, I think are on the call. Maybe we'll unmute their phone at one point here just to say hello. I just want to say, you know, before, maybe right before that, just that we flew to Dubai, which, as you know, is in the United Arab Emirates. It's right bordering Oman, Saudi Arabia, right across the Persian Gulf from Iran, next to Bahrain and Kuwait, close to Iraq. It's right, sort of right in the heart of the Middle East. The Yemen is close by, where there's a lot of upset and quite a lot of violence, actually, unfortunately, going on. Although Dubai itself is a sort of this miraculous city in many ways. It's just sort of blossomed in the desert in maybe 15 years, from almost nothing to this huge city with the largest mall in the world, the tallest building in the world. It's this ultra-modern megalopolis, you know, this totally, like, futuristic architecture with just a very unusual system, you know, where, you know, 90% of the people that live in Dubai are from other countries. Many of them are from other Muslim countries like Jordan or Egypt, or they're from Europe or the United States or India, a lot from India. But only 10% of the people, you know, actually are local people. And those 10%, it's very interesting, and from what I understand, they're basically guaranteed, you know, they pay them every month money and guaranteed education and health care and housing and everything. So they're basically set for life because there's a lot of wealth in Dubai that comes in. And so the 90% that come in through Dubai are there because they want to make a living in real estate or oil and gas or financial services of a big three industries that are going on there. So when I gave a lecture on promoting veganism, it was basically to these people, to these expats, they're called expats, people who are, you know, expatriates from wherever they happen to be, people from England and all over the place, and South Africa and Europe and the United States, Canada, and Australia, and some other countries too. There was only, I think, a handful of actual sort of Muslim people who came. And but it was very well received. I thought it went very well, in spite of the fact it was right around Christmas and not a good time, because most being expats, a lot of people leave the country and go back to their families or to where they're born for the holidays. But we did that, and we also did a couple of other lectures a little bit later, shorter ones, more intimate ones, and we did something down in Abu Dhabi, which is the other big city in the United Arab Emirates as well, and then did some outings, which was very interesting, going, you know, camping on the beach and going to the Straits of Hormuz and snorkeling and things like that, and meeting quite a variety of people. But in all of that, I did have a chance also to talk to Muslims, and I really learned a little bit more. I'm trying to figure out the whole Muslim approach to animals, and even though the Quran and Muhammad are quite strong on the teaching of compassion for animals, there definitely does seem to be a strong thread among Muslims that you really should sacrifice at least one animal a year if you're a devout Muslim. And it's kind of hard to get out of it, according to what's in the Quran, but people do. I mean, there are Muslim vegans. There definitely are. But on the other hand, when I talked to Muslims that were pretty, serious Muslims, they were not vegans. And I said, well, but couldn't you be a vegan and be a Muslim? And they said, well, yeah, you could be, but it's kind of like being a Christian that never goes to church. You know, you're just sort of in name only. You're not really, because they have to, you know, one of the things they're really supposed to do, according to what they kept telling me, especially if you're a man, is to sacrifice a goat, you know, at least once a year. And that means you actually hold the goat in your hands and you actually draw the knife across the throat of the goat. And you do it as a gift to God. You know, you do it in a very sort of conscious way. They explained the whole thing to me very much. And it's like you really love this goat. So go, you raise yourself as possible. And then you give it as a give the goat, him or her, as a gift. I mean, to me, it's utterly, it's repulsive, but as a gift, and that's a spiritual practice. It's an actual kind of spiritual practice. And then, of course, they cook the goat and eat the goat as well. But this seems to be an important part of the religion for many people. It's very traditional over there, you know. I mean, women were so much of the time were wearing black, not just headdresses, but veils over their faces, and sometimes over their whole face, and sometimes part of the face. And men were wearing the traditional white robes and things a lot. And so, I really get the feeling of being in a society where there's quite a different way. The Quran, you know, as I understand it, really dictates how you live your life down to every detail, and how you run your government, and how much taxes are, and it's explicitly prohibited in the Quran to have a democracy, for example, that there must be a ruler, a king, or a sheikh, or an emir, or a sultan, or something like that, that runs, hopefully benevolently, the country. And so quite a lot of the values that we sort of have in the West are just sort of not part of their value structure. And although there is compassion for animals, again, there's quite a few stories I heard about how the Prophet Muhammad said that if, you know, there was a guy that was herding a cat or something like that, and that he would go to hell because of that, you know, because he was harming this creature. And Prophet Muhammad also apparently very strongly recommended the consumption of dairy products as being very healthy and healing. But there, you know, also are scholars who say that that's really not to recommend the kind of quantities of dairy we're eating today. And also eating beef is actually kind of prohibited in the Quran. It's only sheep and goats, and certainly not pigs, of course. And so there was quite a bit of discussion and debate, but it's a little, it seems, anyway, the takeaway is that it's a little bit more tricky for, at least for conventional Muslims to be vegan than, say, Christians. I think Christians, there's very little in the way we, most Christians see the Bible, that sort of mandates you have to eat meat. I mean, it's not, it's like you can, but you're not like you have to. And whereas with the Muslims, it was more like, well, you really have to. And so that was somewhat disturbing to me, but I think, part of it's just a matter of, as I explained quite a bit when I was speaking to people over there, that there's hundreds of years ago and times change, and we have to understand that and realize that maybe in Muhammad's time there was a very, good reason to say that, but today when people are starving, we shouldn't be feeding grain to animals and eating their flesh while there's food shortages for humans. And besides the devastating cruelty and abuse to animals and the ill health effects as well. So all those things together, I think, there was one Muslim woman who came to all of my lectures, and she was very traditional and just seemed to really love it and said she was a vegan herself. So I think it is definitely possible. I also heard from Doreen, who is the woman who basically hosted us the whole time. We stayed for 10 days in her apartment on the 31st floor of this tower in Dubai, that she's in touch with a Palestinian Muslim who's a vegan who has read the World Peace Diet, and then she asked him about translating the World Peace Diet into Arabic for the Muslim world, and he apparently said that the Muslim world is not yet ready for the World Peace Diet, so he hasn't got a good idea to translate it yet, but hopefully, maybe in a few years, we can translate it into Arabic. So that's the main thing I want to say about our time in Dubai. And then we flew on New Year's Eve to Johannesburg and then on to Cape Town, and we're met at the airport by our old friend Rowan, who went through the World Peace Facilitator training, in 2000 and I don't know what it was, 10 maybe, in Cincinnati in Loveland at the Jubilee, and went back to South Africa, and then embarked on a 5-year writing marathon. And just when we got there, basically finished up his new book, Animals Are Not Food, something like that, I think it's the title. And it's a real tour de force book. I mean, it's 700 pages of the going into the medical reasons why animal foods are devastating to our health. And he really goes into it. Every possible ailment, disease, and toxin and problem with animal-based foods, he goes through the whole thing, because in South Africa, it's interesting, this is, everybody's talking about this guy Tim Noakes, who's a very popular sports physician in South Africa that everybody loved, and was famous and was not at all into prescribing diets to people at all, but somehow he got, I don't know what happened, but anyway, he got somehow, he ended up on the side of what's called the Banting. They call it down in South Africa the Banting diet, after this guy Banting, who lived in the 1800s, who recommended a diet very rich in meat and dairy products, saying that the high protein, low carbohydrate diet is the best way to be healthy, kind of an Atkins diet basically. And Tim Noakes jumped on the bandwagon, and he's written books about it, and they have sold, like, they've been the number one bestsellers of all time in South Africa. Everybody loves hearing this information, that the more meat, the better. And actually meeting these people and seeing the culture, I can see why. It's very much, in many ways, kind of like a Texas culture in the United States. It's pretty much organized around barbecues and sort of the macho male mentality, and eating meat is absolutely, where it's at. And it's very typical, kind of, like the United States is in many ways too. But it's maybe a little more isolated than we are in the United States. And so it's been possible for this Atkins-type diet to get extremely popular there. And so Rowan, a good old friend Rowan, is kind of taking up the cause to single-handedly battle the behemoth. And his book, he's writing this book, and he's writing another book. This book is just coming out. In fact, today he sent me an email like the day before yesterday and said if I could please finish up the foreword to his new book so he can get it onto Amazon like today or tomorrow. And so I sent him the foreword. I wrote it this morning. And so he has that. So you should see his book up there. Maybe I'll send the link to everybody. And you can download it. It's self-published. And it's an excellent book. It's kind of like the Bible of nutrition. He just focuses just on nutrition, but everything is in there. If you want to look anything up, you can look it up in his book. So that was, and then Ron gave us a ride back to Grayton, which is about a two-hour drive from Cape Town, going inland, you know, sort of basically going northeast from Cape Town into the countryside. And his former wife, Nikki from England, have a sanctuary. It's called the Grayton, Sanctuary, and they have 11 wonderful pigs, as well as a bunch of other animals there. And so I woke up in the morning with these pigs right outside the door, trying to get in, beautiful, friendly pigs. And so they have a transition town, which I think is a very interesting concept. Are you familiar with transition towns? It's a movement, it's an international movement. I know Boulder is a transition town, I think Berkeley, quite a few of them are. And the idea is that you're a town where you're trying to transition into a more sustainable way of living. And grow your own food more, recycle everything more, generate your own electricity, solar panels, things like that. So just to become more sustainable. And so it started in Europe and it's just spreading worldwide. And I guess there's three transition towns in Africa. There's only one that's actually sort of an official transition town that's really going by all the guidelines. And it's Grayton, where we were. Grayton is the only official transition town and it's vegan. And in other words, the transition town people, which is basically Nikki, and Rowan and a few other people who are really sort of spearheading this effort in Grayton to put Grayton on the map as a transition town, as a sustainable, very sustainable place to live. The way they're defining transition town is that it must be vegan. So they're doing vegan education. So it's very interesting. I mean, it's actually very interesting. There's a young man there named Marshall, who is a black man. It's because that was the thing. Pretty much everybody, when I gave lectures and so forth in South Africa, it was mostly I was speaking to the white community. And the black community is, a lot of them are living in shanty towns, unfortunately, which are really substandard housing. I mean, substandard. I mean, it's how these poor people live there, the kind of places you see. And to have white people telling everybody that they should be eating a certain way doesn't go along that well. But Marshall is this wonderful man that we met in Grayton who's a local, and his grandmother taught him a lot about how to forage and get healthy foods right in the countryside. And now he's been educated and is going into the schools. It reminds me of Lorena a little bit. He's going to the schools, mostly the younger students, so not the high school, high school also, but also the younger, and teaching them how to grow their own food. So that's a great thing to do, actually. You teach them how to grow their own food. So he's going into six different schools in the Grayton area, and they all now have gardens. They all have organic gardens where the students are growing their own food to feed themselves, plus they're selling the food that they're growing, the vegetables and things that they're growing, at local farmers markets. So they're making money at it too. And so I think this is just a wonderful thing. Plus he's also teaching them, on the side, the benefits of plant-based eating. And so it was really great to see, to meet Marshall and to see the work he's doing. Then also they have another woman who's a humane educator. They're getting funding for their Grayton GTT, they call it Grayton Transition Town project from Humane Society International. So they're getting this funding And with the funding, they can hire humane educators. Another besides Marshall, are hiring a woman and another person to go into the schools and share the vegan message, basically. And so we gave a lecture there on Friday night, which was well attended. And then on Saturday and Sunday, we did a World Peace Diet workshop. We have a picture of that on the resources for January of 2016 that you can all access on some resources. It's on the third page. And you can see the various people there that went through the course with us, including the very tall guy, Brett Bard, who is a very interesting person. And he's a vegan veterinarian. So he's a total veteran, he's a total vegan and a veterinarian. He's basically saying that he cannot be a veterinarian as a vegan, that he has to get out of the practice because the practice is basically about abusing animals and giving them vaccinations and drugs and things that are really not in their best interests. And he just can't do that anymore. So he's sort of transitioning out of being a veterinarian because he is a vegan. But he's also, where he lives, which is about an hour away from Creighton, even farther into the hinterland, he's creating a vegan retreat center. So if you want to find out more, you can let me know. I can give you his email address. He's really an amazing person. He does this thing where it's called Finding Balance. We took a swim in a little stream, four of us, and he, instead of taking a swim, it took us about 20 minutes to take a swim, he balanced rocks. I mean, huge, high, long rocks on other rocks. It would look like they could never, ever, ever balance. And when we came back, he had five of them precariously balanced. Just amazing. He's really a genius in many ways at various things and at balancing rocks also. So that was very inspiring to see him do that. So Brett Bard is another person, one of just a few that we know, who I think really can pull it off. He really has a vision for creating a vegan education center. So it would be a place where you can go on retreat, a vegan retreat. Also, there will be putting on trainings, cleansings, other things, all in support of vegan living, and this will be in a town outside of Creighton. I can't remember the name of it. I have it written down. And just let me know if you're interested. I can, he's in the town of Prince Albert, South Africa. Prince Albert, South Africa is where he is. So that was very interesting. And then after spending time there, and Nikki, she has a vegetarian restaurant that, as now they've decided to make it vegan in Creighton, and as well as the sanctuary, as well as the transition town. So there's a lot happening there. It's a very progressive community, a lot of artists and so forth. And so then after all that, we drove into Cape Town. We've looked at all the pelicans that they have at the beach on the way. And in Cape Town, we were hosted by Ian and Don McFarlane, who are local vegans, who have the Ubuntu Center there, which is a alternative medical center. They have a flotation tanks, maybe all the sensory deprivation tanks, flotation tanks, isolation tanks. I spent quite a bit of time. I spent one night actually in one of those. And it's very interesting. You can go into a very deep meditation. They're totally dark and silent, and you're floating in the salt water. It's very high in salt, so you float high in the surface, and the water's heated. It's the same temperature of your body, so there's like no tactile sensation, sound, or anything. It's like you're just consciousness sort of floating in the universe. It's that kind of a feeling. And so they have that. It's a whole healing center with this beautiful, gigantic fig tree in the courtyard that we heard the story of that. Apparently a shaman from way up north in Tanzania or Ethiopia or somewhere up north got it in his meditation or in his dream. He got a message from this tree that is in their courtyard, and he walked for like 6 months all the way from there down to all the way across the wilderness of Africa, and ended up in Cape Town there and knocked on their door and said, "Your tree has called me." And he stayed there for several weeks and did ceremonies and named the tree and so forth. I guess it's a very powerful tree. But we did a lecture right there, and then did a workshop, like same thing, you know, a 3-day workshop on what will be a facilitator training workshop. We have wonderful people attending, including Andy and Sven, the Velo Vegans. Velo means bicycle, I think, in German. And so they travel around South Africa on their bicycles, and in various ways they bring the vegan message to people. So it was wonderful to meet them, and to meet Ian and Don also, who we had been in touch with as well, and then to meet quite a few other people who are helping to promote vegan living in South Africa. And we did a tree planting ceremony also. And then after all that was over, we went to a wildlife preserve up near Kimbavati, near Kruger National Park in the north. East part of South Africa, where there's a wild, it's a sanctuary for white lions, and that's a whole other very interesting topic. But apparently, white lions emerged about 400 years ago as a, according to the shamans, as a species, a subspecies of lions. They're not albinos; they're actual white lions, and that they have a very special message and gift for human beings, that we should honor and respect them. And unfortunately, what's been happening is that trophy hunters are just killing them all, and or they're putting them in circus acts, like in Las Vegas. So most of the white lions at this point are in canned hunting ranches and are just being bred to be shot and put on people's walls. There's only 10 that are actually living basically freely in a sanctuary setting where they're you know, hunting their own prey. And so we went to one of these sanctuary started by a woman named Linda. What's her name? Linda Thomas, I think. And she was very interesting. And we had a whole vegan event there with people from Israel that had come down to meet me and Madeline. And one is a TV anchor woman who's in Tel Aviv, who's a vegan. The other is the founder of a vegan animal sanctuary in Israel. And so they wanted to also get to know this white lion phenomenon a little bit better too. So we, you know, both morning and afternoon, we went out and attempted to see the lions if we could. It's a huge area to try to find them and find her. And also, you know, we saw lots of, you know, wildlife as well, wildebeest and lots of different antelopes and things. And so it was just a good ending to our time. Although after that, we went south to Johannesburg and gave a lecture there before flying back. And so that was also, and we also gave a lecture in Durban. And we just met fantastic people. In Durban, there's a fellow there named Andre, who's a captain on one of Paul Watson's Sea Shepherd ships, the Sam Simon. He's the captain of the Sam Simon ship. And so he's also started a vegan restaurant called Conscious Cafe. It was excellent food there, and there was an excellent, huge turnout at the Durban event. It was full. And the same thing in Johannesburg, it was full. And we met wonderful people, vegan restaurants there, too. A lot of really very enthusiastic vegan advocates in Johannesburg also. So we really were very impressed with everyone. We were treated very well. There was a lot of, you know, a big sense that in the last 5 to 7 years, the vegan movement has really grown. There's vegan restaurants popping up in these in several cities. We were interviewed. I was interviewed in several different magazines, and in fact, I'm still writing doing another interview now that was set up by Andy. So there seems to be a lot of interest in veganism, although right now, as I said, the big problem in many ways for us and for animals is the banting movement in South Africa is so strong, this Atkins movement. I'd like to go ahead and unmute Andy and Sven. You know, I've been talking about it. It was so wonderful to meet them. You can see the picture on the resources. That's a picture of them under that big tree on the left on their bicycles. And they have these brightly colored rainbow hairdos and and a flag on their bikes. And they they ride around. But I just want to say hi to Andy and Sven. I think you guys are on the call, so maybe if it's okay, I know it's probably something like 3 o'clock in the morning where you are. Are you there? Hello? Maybe not. All right. Well, I see they're here, it looks like, but maybe it was a difficult connection I know that they had with, it was through a VoIP connection from South Africa because it's not that easy to work. So, all right. Well, it was a good try, but we did, have a wonderful time with Andy and Sven going. We climbed together to the top of Lion's Head Mountain, which is in Cape Town, which is quite a hike. I mean, you're going up these steep cliffs, beautiful views. And very inspiring to meet them and to finally, because they also call in, you know, Lily Macy has the Peace Diet Sunday event, which is always also for them, even though it's in the evening. For us, it's at about 2 or 3 in the morning for them, and they never miss the call. So they're very dedicated people, and they're just now heading off. They came back, apparently, just to meet us on their bikes, and so they're heading off on their bikes again, heading north, and their plan is to try to get all the way up to, I guess, somewhere in Ethiopia. They want to get to Ethiopia. Sorry we missed you guys, but thanks so much for your wonderful efforts. I really appreciate it. All right, so that's basically it, I think, for that. And I'm noticing it's about 10:20 here in Florida, so we've kind of used up our time. It's been a wonderful call. I want to thank everyone for joining the call. Please notice that on the January 2016 resources sheet, we have quite a few interesting things. John Muir says, surely a better time must be drawing nigh when godlike beings will become truly humane and learn to put their animal fellow mortals in their hearts instead of on their backs or in their stomachs. So putting, I love how John Muir called animals our fellow mortals. And he had that sense of kinship with all life, you know, that we're human beings on this earth and we're mortals and animals are also mortals. And it's that mortality that we all share, that precious innocence and that sense of the precious temporary nature of our lives, that gives our lives a quality of preciousness and transiency that binds us together in a very intimate, powerful way. So I really like that, our fellow mortals. I also call it our fellow passengers, our fellow passengers on the earth, the ship. Our fellow mortals, and put our fellow mortals in our hearts instead of on our backs or in our stomachs. Thank you, John Muir. He was also a vegetarian. I think he was a vegan, actually. I remember going to a play about his life, and he laughed. He said how everybody... everybody eats food that they first pass under the udder of a cow. He said, how ridiculous to pass your food under the udder of a cow before you'll eat it. He was referring to all the cream sauces and cheese and all that stuff. And this is way back in the early 1900s, late 1800s. So I think he was a vegan long before, he was a real pioneer. But anyway, so there's some nice, videos and audio things of that I shared in the last month, a lecture I gave on veganism and sustainability, an interview for the Brighton England Vegfest where I'll be speaking next month, and also an interview for an Italian television station when we were in Italy, and then also a couple of interviews in the Cape Town newspapers. And then a video of the lecture that I gave recently in Albuquerque. Those are all there. So we have those things. And then some of our World Peace Diet family is doing some new things. Stefan Wolf, with his documentary on European alternative communities that I mentioned last month, a new we, Sandra Higgins in Ireland. She's going to be hosting me, actually. I'll be speaking in Ireland in early March in Dublin. She has been doing fantastic work. We've been hearing about that with her animal sanctuary in Ireland, and also all the posters she's been putting. You know, she's got these posters going up on buses, on trains, by the highways, billboards. Very, very hard-hitting vegan campaign. She's been on the radio, newspaper, debating, you know, meat farmers and so forth. So good old Sandra's doing great work. Megan, the vegan, remember Megan the vegan? She's down in the San Diego area, and she's working with the Humane Education Program. There's an article about that. Joanna Blads, the Facebook group, she's one of our facilitators. And Kim Benson also has a video out. So a lot happening, and Vegan 2015 is a great film. I highly recommend. It's a really great summary of all the progress that was made in the vegan world in 2015. It's just very important, I think, to realize that we're making huge strides. Every year we're growing faster and faster and faster. The momentum is building, and like I say, we see it everywhere. We see it in vegan restaurants in Dubai and Cape Town and Durban and Johannesburg and many other places in the world, in Africa and all over the world. So we see those things. This is a very interesting article about, plant-based food is named as the top trend for 2016. That's one of the top trends for 2016, is plant-based foods. This other thing that I think is just outrageous, it's near the bottom of first page, huge loophole, helps the meat industry hide its pollution. You know, the Congress has recently passed an act that actually prohibits the EPA from measuring how much pollution the meat, you know, animal agriculture causes, even though the United States signed an agreement in Paris to monitor the amount of pollution that all industries are creating. And of the 41 industries in the United States that create significant pollution, especially global warming type pollution, all 41 industries have to report to the EPA what they're doing. It's part, not only part of what our government requires, but also what the Paris treaty that was signed requires. But the meat industry has now been excluded, you know, from that. I mean, they're just excluded. They don't have to report, you know, because I guess it's too embarrassing, too ridiculous. So they just are excluded. So that goes right along with, of course, what we've been saying, and which is, number one, how devastating the animal agriculture industry is, and number two, how unbelievably powerful they are that they write their own laws and exclude themselves from reporting any of their pollution. And no one even seems to care. I mean, no one is not making a big, no one's making a fuss about it. I'm amazed at how this happens. But that's an important development. Also, right below that, the final thing on that page, veganism is declared a creed in Ontario. That's very important, I think, because I've talked about the fact that veganism, you know, we need to have some kind of religious standing or some kind of standing for the people who are in schools or in prisons or nursing homes or, you know, governmental institutions of some kind or other or whatever, can have their rights respected if they don't want to eat dairy. And usually the only way you can do that is you can say it's because of your religion. And so now Ontario is, I think, one of the first governments in the world to recognize veganism as, not as a religion, but as a creed, and that people who have a creed, that their creed carries weight, and that they are not obligated to wear leather or to eat meat, or I would say even to take vaccinations, which are also non-vegan. So very interesting. Anyway, that's starting to happen, and hopefully it'll spread. A great article by Susie Cameron. That's the famous filmmaker Cameron's wife. They have a vegan school, and she writes quite a strong article about how the latest USDA eating guidelines are just totally skewed toward meat and dairy and eggs, and as they always have been. And there's quite a few other interesting articles on that page too. I just found it very interesting, especially the AstroTurf and the manipulation of the media messages. It's very important to understand that, how there's a lot of money involved with the pharmaceutical industry and the meat, dairy, and egg industry. And astroturfing is basically fake grassroots work. So Facebook postings and Twitter and other online social media kinds of things, they pay people to not only write letters and write articles and write posts that forward the agenda of the meat, dairy, and egg and the medical pharmaceutical industry, but they also pay people to write news articles, and I mean it just really goes on to manipulate the media on every level, newspaper, television, radio, and social media. So be very aware. You have to just really be very aware of this happening, and not take anything that you see at face value, actually. All right, so that's great, and there's quite a few more things here that are interesting, but I think it's getting very late. It's 10:30, so I'd like to begin to wrap it up. Our good friend Marlene has raised her hand. I'd like to recognize Marlene before we say goodnight. Marlene, are you there?
Yes, thank you, Will. And hi, Nancy, Lorena, and Pamela, and everyone. I'll be very quick. I just wanted to say that Sandra Higgins is on Vegan Nation, and she's remarkable. So she has two interviews, and that can be heard at wcuw.org/Vegan Nation. I know that you've sent that link out, but I just wanted to
Excellent.
Let everybody know that she was in December. So thank you.
Awesome. So we can listen to you and talking to Sandra then. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
In that interview. Great. Oh, we have to get that. All right. I'll make the link for that and send it out, because that sounds really interesting. Wonderful.
Thanks.
And thanks so much, Marlene, for your show that you do it's every week, I think, right?
Yes, and tomorrow is part two of Ruth Heydrich. She was in Forks Over Knives.
Oh, yeah. Ruth Heydrich's a wonderful marathon runner, vegan, and athlete, and she's a good friend of ours, lives in Hawaii. Great. Yeah, she that must be fascinating to talk
Very.
To her, too.
Yes.
Good. All right, highly recommended. I'll send out a link for that. That's great. Okay, bless you. Thanks so much, Marlene. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you. Good night.
Yeah, good night. All right, everyone. Well, it's quite late. As I've said, I'm still jet-lagged from the flight back from South Africa, and a little bit to my dismay, when I get back, and, you know, I've had this I call it my blue book, this address book. I've had it now for close to 30 years. It has all my contacts and all the upcoming events. Everything is in there. It's I still do it by, you know, by I write it in as pencil, and anyway, it somehow disappeared into thin air after 30 years. It's either in Dubai or, I mean, on the way back, we flew from Johannesburg to Dubai, and from Dubai to Orlando. It was like a 35-hour marathon flight, and it's just somewhere on the plane or somewhere. And even though I've contacted the airports and everywhere, nobody seems to have it. So I'm having to recreate that. So that's a great exercise in patience and kind of and just seeing that whatever it is that happens, say, oh, I can hardly see what good will come out of this, so I'm looking to see what good's coming out of it. And maybe the new one I'll create will be more small and a little more portable. That might be good. So we're working on that. But I want to say, and I'm kind of looking at I don't have my usual calendar to look at here, see when we're going to be meeting again next time, but it'll be in February. The third Thursday of February is February 18th, which is Thursday night at the usual time. We'll have our World Peace Diet Circle on February 18th. And, gosh, you know, and until then, we'll be traveling all over Florida. So if you happen to be in Florida or you know people in Florida, look at our schedule on worldpeacediet.com. You can see where we're going to be. And right after that, I'll be flying just by myself to London and speaking in Brighton, Birmingham, and Bristol, and London, and Dublin, and then over to Amsterdam. and then flying back, and then we'll be doing another talk a few weeks later in the Easter weekend in Seattle. Actually, I'll be flying up to Whidbey Island to the Whidbey Institute for a special conference on intersectionality, which, as you know, is the connection between animal abuse and social injustice issues. And then we'll be working our way up the coast, in April to Asheville, North Carolina. And we're not sure exactly where, probably Charleston, South Carolina, and probably Greensboro, and up to Raleigh, and up to Virginia Beach, and then up to Baltimore at the end of May, and then up to New England in June. We'll be in Portland at the end of June, and then working our way west slowly, and then across the north, the Midwest in September, and back into California in October. So if you, wherever you are, let us know. If you're somewhere on that pathway, we can perhaps get together. And as I say, if you have any questions about anything related to vegan advocacy, please don't hesitate to be in touch. And we look forward to continuing to work together to spread the message of compassion for all living beings. Madeline and I send you all our love. And I know Tara also, who has been helping out so much with our web development and everything else, sends her love too, which is part of the team, and Judy Carmen, Mark Stroud. We were hoping to get a chance to talk to Mark this evening, but it's just time, I don't know where, it just flew by. But Mark and Anna are working hard on their World Peace Diet cookbook and World Peace Diet yoga book, and I know Jim and Lily Macy with World Peace Diet Sunday. That'll be starting up again on February 14th. So taking a short break until that begins up again. And we've got lots of projects going on. It's great to hear. Remember Lorena Muke, what she's doing. If you're interested, check out the website for her work. And I think at this point, that's just about everything. So I send you all my deepest appreciation and love and respect for the work you're doing. Look forward to hopefully seeing you somewhere along the line, our paths crossing somewhere. If you know anybody that you think would benefit from taking the World Peace Diet online training, please let them know. It's really great to have people going through the training and then bringing the World Peace Diet version and a sense of the vegan message to communities around the United States and around the world. So we're part of this movement. And I just handed in actually today the final writings for and approvals for the 10th anniversary of the World Peace Diet. So that will be hitting, that'll be coming out soon, the 10th anniversary edition. It's a little bit different. It's the same basic text with some study questions added and a new foreword added and a new resources section added. And, but otherwise it's the same, pretty much the same book, and a new back cover, I guess, has been changed a little bit too, so updated. So that's coming along as well. So, all right, that's basically it. Much love to you all, and we'll look forward to being in touch on our next World Peace Diet circle call on February 18th. Blessings and love and peace, and may compassion encircle the earth for all beings everywhere.